Welcome to Money, Markets and Masterminds, a Citywire South Africa podcast that delves into the intricate world of finance, investment and strategic decision making. If you're a fund selector or an independent financial advisor or an institutional capitalist looking for insights, analysis and expert opinions to enhance your perspective, you're in the right place here with me, editor Ruwan Uester. Today is the eighth episode of an underlying series in partnership with Morningstar South Africa and their head of investments, Sean Nietling, called Mind Over Markets, and also the first Citywire South Africa podcast for the year. So I wish all our listeners and readers a prosperous 2025. But with the past 12 months now firmly in the rear view mirror, it's now time, it's that time of year where people start returning to work, like myself, who was back at my desk on Monday, hopefully refreshed from the year-end break and looking to investment markets with new year resolutions firmly in hand. It's also that time of year where we like to put fund managers and allocators on the spot and ask to gaze into their crystal balls for their expectations on the year ahead. Markets posted outstanding returns last year, with the S&P 500 up 25%, and US mega cap tech stocks continue to power ahead as well. Nvidia was up another staggering 200%, with other so-called Mag 7 names, including Meta and Amazon, trailing, but still delivering returns in excess of 50%. This is off the back of 2023 performance, where US markets, again led by tech stocks, were up by more than 20%. That's just crazy. But Europe and other developed markets, while positive, lagged significantly against this performance. And while we saw China provide a glimmer of hope following stimulus announcements, emerging markets' performance has been quite mixed. South Africa was a notable exception, with equities, bonds, and property all delivering strong returns following local elections. But with Donald Trump said to be inaugurated as the US president on January the 20th, the market will be paying close attention to tax, tariff, and immigration policies that are expected to appease his America First voter base. So the questions that I have are, should we expect US equity to continue with the high double-digit returns generated over the last 2 years, or is more caution warranted for the year ahead? What does the outlook for global interest rates and inflation look like, and what does that mean for both developed and emerging equity and bond markets? And can South Africa continue to build off positive sentiment following last year's elections, and can local assets sustain performance we saw in 2024? Well, to help me to get some of the answers to these questions, I have Sean Nietling, Head of Investments at Morningstar South Africa, back in studio. Welcome back, Sean, and happy 2025.
Thanks, Ruwan, and happy 2025 to you and your listeners as well, and all the best for the year ahead.
Thanks, man. But let's start with the market outlooks in general. There's no shortage of them going around at the moment. It's almost impossible to go online without seeing some form of forecast or what we should expect this year. But let's not veer from the path. Do you use or consider any of these forecast tools that other investment managers, banks and allocators publish? And how should we, the readers, people view them as well?
Yeah, Ruwan. So I think, you know, forecasts are seldom correct. So we don't spend too much time of them on them at Morningstar. We've got no ability to predict the future. So we tend to steer clear of calling markets higher or lower, on a short-term basis, especially over, you know, the next 12 months. You know, what we can say, you know, with a fair amount of uncertainty is that, you know, over that period, they'd inevitably do both, you know, up and down. More important for us is in terms of, I suppose, the directionality is for clients to actually stay invested, you know, through those periods to achieve their investment goals. So we've really taken a very different approach, I suppose, in our version of an outlook at Morningstar, and try to put something together that's a bit more relevant to advisors and their clients. So I'm happy to share a link to that piece if there's interest, but the piece really speaks to our thinking not only around investment markets, but also in terms of helping clients think about how to grow and protect their capital, guard against behavioral bias, especially in a market that's very choppy, and then also potentially just dig into some of the innovations that could, I suppose, impact on markets on a forward-looking view. So I think, you know, that's the approach that we've taken in terms of how we use, I suppose, other pieces. I think what we most look for is opinions that differ from ours. And I'd say that would be almost the devil's advocate into our process. But in terms of relying on them to call markets, in terms of directionality, it probably doesn't add as much value.
The last year seems to have gone by relatively quickly. Well, in my world anyway, from national government elections across the globe, geopolitical conflicts and fast-paced market activity. It seems like a lot was packed into the last 12 months. Maybe you can give us a high-level flashback and highlight some of your key takeaways from 2024. What did you miss or least expect, and what surprised you the most?
Yeah, Ron. So 2024 was a really interesting year. I think, in general, looking back, I'd say the dominant theme remained US exceptionalism, both in terms of market performance and economic growth. I think while inflation has proven to be stickier than expected and interest rates probably remained elevated, the economy has demonstrated the resilience that most other countries have really struggled with. So I think, in terms of the year itself, it's useful to break out, market performance in terms of, let's say, two halves. So that first and second half of last year, and that would apply really to global and local markets. So I think globally, what we saw was some of that extreme market concentration start to come off in the second half of the year. We started to see a bit of a rotation away from the US large cap growth stocks, potentially into less crowded parts of the market. So you have small caps that started to come through again. They've given some of that performance back, but you started to see investors start to rotate. Again, like you touched on in the intro, emerging markets delivered decent performance, although they lagged. And we saw positions like India running fairly hard again on economics. And then China had that pronounced bounce sort of in the second half of the year. So I think we've also seen, other parts of the world like Japan, we had an unwind and subsequent, let's call it rewind of that Japanese carry trade, fixed income markets as well. So pretty mixed over the year, largely underwhelming. But again, the first half of the year, very different to the second half of the year, as investors really started to digest that inflation and interest rates could potentially be a bit stickier. So we saw fixed income markets, government bonds and treasuries in particular, giving some of that performance back. I think if I turn to the local side, it was more about, I suppose, just this renewed optimism about SA post-election. So we saw markets reprice significantly, and that was largely off the back of the DA being included in the Government of National Unity with a majority ANC. Equity market performance was actually, when we looked at it, less broad than what we would have expected. So you saw small and mid caps do exceptionally well, returns through 30%. And your more large cap, and I suppose rand hedges, lagging slightly behind that. I think the bond story has been fairly well covered. Bonds delivered exceptional returns. And we somewhat, I suppose, somewhat circumspect in this environment, just in terms of that level of performance being maintained, but we still like bonds. I think on the whole, 2024 was an outstanding year, especially where the market numbers ended up for SA. And I'd say, sort of going into this year, it's more important to sort of maintain, I suppose, exposure, but also sort of temper some of those expectations. I'd say maybe one or two things I'd cite in terms of surprises, would be again, the market's been exceptionally good, again, probably surprisingly so. And I think what you find, for example, is that you've got successive, let's say, double-digit returns from US markets in an especially choppy environment. And then levels of exuberance also tend to be higher than what we think fundamentals would justify.
Turning to the year ahead, what are your expectations coming into 2025 across both global and local markets? What are some of the opportunities you are looking at, and on the other side, some of the risks you are most concerned about?
Sure. So I think it's best to touch on South Africa first, because we'd largely lead from what's happening in global markets. So we still think South African assets are priced on what we would see as the cheap side of fair value. This would apply to equities, bonds, and property, I suppose, to a lesser extent. So we're still very much constructive on SA, and we would favor bond exposure again, still just given the attractive yields, despite, stellar performance over the last year. South African equities, we also think are cheap, but not equally so. We think that, banks and financials are probably slightly closer to fair value. Resources are exceedingly cheap, but again, unlocking that value in an investment thesis that very much depends on China is probably going to be lower and slower than people expect. And then industrials, is a fairly broad basket, but there are some really well-priced companies in there. So I think if we look at both South African bonds and equities, we really see an unlock of that thesis coming from South African economic growth. And that is largely pegged to, how the coalition government will go about implementing policies. So that's something which we need to pay attention to just in terms of policy direction. I think globally is more difficult to carve out, especially in terms of how we manage exposure and allocations in and around the US. So like I mentioned, I think that rotation that we spoke about in the second half of last year is largely underway. And we'd expect that to continue sort of going into 2025. And this would largely feed into our thinking. So coming into 2025, the way we've positioned is rotation within the US to the parts of the market that are somewhat cheaper. And then also rotation into developed markets and emerging markets, again, somewhat more nuanced to continue. That's highly unlikely to be linear, especially, you know, we're going into an environment where event risk is quite elevated. So you've got the incoming Trump presidency is inaugurated on the 20th of Jan, and you've got these ongoing geopolitical conflicts which still persist in the market. So I think if I look at our convictions, you know, within the US, we think small caps are still reasonably priced. And we would also favor, especially in this type of environment, more defensive exposure. So here you're looking at US healthcare staples. And we would probably add sort of larger US banks in there as well, despite them running quite hard. Then within, you know, the broader DM complex, Europe and the UK are still well-priced and we hold selective exposure there. Japan's actually a really interesting one where you've got corporate reforms underway and also a weak currency that we still think provides a good underpin. And then I think if you look broader at emerging markets, I would say China and Korea are positions that we think are well-priced. And then other parts of the world that are starting to look interesting to us are things like Mexico and Brazil. So I think those on the market side would be our, I suppose, highest convictions. In terms of the risk, we'll probably cite maybe what you could call tail risks. I think on the macro side, it's very difficult to build a probability distribution in terms of how things work. But here you've got US inflation and interest rates still quite uncertain. And the Fed, if you saw what happened last year, it was really a hawkish cut that caused markets, you know, to spiral somewhat towards the end of the year. So you've got this volatility that's still around in terms of how the inflation picture would look. And then related to that is probably ongoing or the potential for ongoing dollar strength and potential currency dislocations. So those would be the main risks on the macro side. And on the market, I think people are aware of how markets are concentrated. But market liquidity is something that's probably less well understood. It's really easy to get into assets, you know, at these prices and see them continuing to run. But I think the withdrawal of liquidity is less understood, especially when valuations are stretched. So coming into 2025, that's something, again, which investors need to be mindful of. Again, especially when you've got these elevated levels of exuberance in markets.
Well, coming into 2025 with the level of uncertainty, as you just mentioned, and as with any new period in a market, and of course, with so much to consider in an environment where speculation is still quite high, how does your outlook reflect in the way you build portfolios and manage risk?
Yeah, Ruan, that's a great question. I think I'm going to, you know, quote the late Charlie Munger here. It's something that's simple, but not easy. I think the simple part in terms of how we think about things at Morningstar is having a repeatable process that's consistent with our investment approach. So as long-term investors, you know, that's our general setup. And coming into 2025, that's no different from any of the frameworks we've used before. The not easy part is building a range of potential solutions that provides clients with some upside participation when you have really expensive markets that just continue to run. And provides relatively more downside protection when markets sell off. So what we're trying to do is to give clients the benefits, you know, of participating in good market performance, while making sure that we try to protect a bit in terms of when you have really violent dislocations. So I think the one thing we're especially mindful of is that, you know, performance at this stage is more driven by sentiment than fundamentals. And then in terms of how we think about portfolios, there's a bit of pragmatism that really comes in to how we size positions. So like I mentioned, we think that, you know, China and Korea are attractive in the emerging market complex, but how we manage that overweight position relative to our underweight positions in the US is actually a very big driver of risk and return. So it's somewhat cliche, but diversification in this environment is absolutely key. I would actually take it a bit further in this environment to say that it's actually about diversifying your diversifiers. So what that means is you have to get as granular as possible and within the US identify those parts that are relatively more attractive while maintaining dollar exposure for clients that are invested on that basis. So that's the general approach that we take. And I think in multi-asset portfolios where you have the mix of bonds and equity, it gives you that ability to diversify a bit more granularly than maybe in standalone solutions.
Well, let's wrap up this conversation with a nice little cheat sheet. What are your top tips for advisors and fund selectors at the start of this year?
Yeah, and so I think, you know, that's probably the most useful thing, and more useful than, I suppose, any sort of outlook or forecast coming into the year. So I think, you know, when we look at it, the most important thing for any investor or client is to invest in the right mandate or the right strategy. If as an investor, you know, you need income and inflation returns of, let's say, plus 2 or 3%, there's really no need to stretch for yield in more aggressive equity portfolios or equity centric or equity heavy portfolios. So making sure that you invested in the right strategy to achieve your goals is probably one of the most important things coming into this year, especially off the back of really stellar performance in 23 and 24. The second is largely related to that, and it's to remain invested, you know, through what is potentially going to be a fairly choppy period for markets. And that's very much to achieve your investment goals. So set very clear goals and stay the course is probably the terminology we would use for that. I think also, you know, coming into this year, and again, just off the back, it doesn't feel like the last year has been exceptional, but it really has been if you look at performance all around for local and global assets. So if you look at that 2024 and 2023 performance, I think it's important to sort of temper and just reset those expectations coming into a period that could potentially be somewhat more choppy. So again, you've had exceptional performance locally from bonds, equities, and property. It's more mixed on the global side, but we're seeing a basket of opportunities that are particularly cheap outside of the US. So I think, you know, coming into the year, tapering those expectations, but remaining invested is going to be exceedingly important. And then I'd say the last one would be, you know, in this environment, there's no such thing as a free lunch. So be somewhat skeptical and mindful of if things are packaged as guaranteed. There's usually something that's given up when a guarantee is in place. And most often it's liquidity, where investors are basically investing in different strategies, but that immediate access to their capital might be somewhat constrained because those investments would be locked up in underlying vehicles. So I think those would be the top three or four that I would say investors could potentially look at coming into the year.
Well, that's all the time we have for today. And as we navigate these uncertain times, staying informed and ahead of the curve is more important than ever. Thank you, Sean, for joining us for another episode of Mind Over Markets with Morningstar. We look forward to meeting with you next month for another in-depth discussion and some actionable insights. To all our Citywire South African listeners, thank you for tuning into this episode of Money, Markets and Masterminds with me, editor Ruan Uster, and my producer, Lucia Gurry from the Citywire Studios production team. If you enjoyed this episode, please don't forget to subscribe, leave a review and share it with your network. We are available on all major platforms such as Spotify and Apple Podcasts and Iono.fm. All Citywire South Africa podcasts and videos are also available on its homepage. Go register and have a look at our wealth of multimedia content. And with that, and until next time.